and welcome to our Q3 update call following our announcement yesterday evening, ahead of our scheduled Q3 results release on the 28th of October. I am Clara Valera, and I recently joined Fluidra as Investor Relations and Business Development Director. I am here with our Executive Chairman, Eloy Planes, our CEO, Bruce Brooks, and Xavier Tintoré, our CFTO. Bruce and Eloy will walk you through a few slides on our Q3 update, and then they will all be available to take your questions. You can follow this presentation in its original English version or in Spanish. Please select your preferred option in the drop-down menu at the bottom right-hand side of your screen. If you would like to ask a question, please go to the Ask a Question tab on your screen, where you will find the relevant telephone number and PIN code. Please feel free to dial in during the presentation so that the operator can include you in the Q&A roster. The presentation is accessible via our website, fluidra.com, and has also been uploaded to the Stock Exchange Commission. A replay of today's presentation will be made available on our website later today. With that, I hand over to our Executive Chairman, Eloy Planes.
Good morning to you all, and thank you for your interest in Fluidra and for taking the time to join us this morning. You will, of course, have noticed that we have taken the unusual step to pre-announce our quarterly results. Why have we done this? Like many businesses around the world, we are experiencing an important change in some elements of our trading conditions, and it is always our approach, and indeed in our DNA, to be transparent with our investors and all our shareholders. Therefore, our objective today is to share with you what we are seeing and the best of our ability in the current environment and an updated picture of our expectations. Above all, despite the current change in the climate, my leadership team, my board, and myself, we are very confident that all our work to strengthen and position the group for long-term success are in excellent shape. That team is unaltered, and all our ongoing efforts will be to optimize our performance for customers, for employees, and for shareholders. We look forward to discussing with you this morning and then in more detail at our scheduled Q3 results next week. With that, I hand first to Bruce.
Good morning, and thanks, Eloy. And thank you all for participating today in this conference call. We started the year strongly, with Q1 volume growth year-on-year, continuing the trends of 2021, and an overall good first half. Our distribution partners, pool professionals, and end customers continued to generate strong demand. However, trading conditions have weakened during the third quarter, affected in the short term by a higher-than-expected channel inventory correction in a more uncertain economic environment. The market conditions we are now seeing leads us to revise our guidance for the year. We will share with you today our preliminary third quarter results, our revised 2022 guidance, and the actions we are taking. We are seeing a strong destocking effect, in particular in North America. Supply chain disruptions, coupled with accelerated demand in 2020-2021, and continued into the first half of 2022, generated high stock levels along the supply chain in order to protect their business. Inflation further accelerated the inventory buildup, in particular in North America. Distribution bought additional stock to beat price increases. We are now seeing a normalization of inventory levels along the supply chain. We continue to increase our prices, passing on raw material cost increases despite some mixed impacts in the third quarter and during Q3. Price read-through in North America has accelerated. Some raw material prices and transportation are showing signs of decline, which is positive for our margins. Nevertheless, the macroeconomic environment remains uncertain, in particular in Northern Europe, leading to softer demand and inventory correction, driven by low consumer confidence on the back of higher energy costs, other inflationary pressures, and higher interest rates, with a backdrop of geopolitical instability. Southern Europe remains more resilient, in particular thanks to the tourist season and commercial pool demand. On the positive side, in North America, we still see good sell-through of around mid-single-digit growth year on year. Now we are in the middle of the early buy campaign, which is going well and returns us to a more normalized purchase cycle. In APAC, where we did not grow as strongly last year, we are seeing a more stable demand and limited destocking. Australia, our main country in the region, continues to evolve positively. The summer campaign in the Southern Hemisphere will begin shortly. The slowdown in volumes is also influencing our inventory levels and cash flow generation. That positions our ratio of net debt to last 12-month EBITDA at the end of the quarter at around 2.4 times. As a consequence of these factors, we are expecting Q3 sales of around 520 million euros, down 7% year-on-year, FX adjusted. Q3 EBITDA is expected to be around 95 million euros. Moving on to slide number 4, we wanted to explain our 2022 guidance in context. Fluidra is a stronger business today than in 2019, despite the correction. We expect the destocking to peak in Q4 and therefore estimate sales in the financial year 2022 to be around 2.4 billion euros. On the left-hand side of the slide, you can see a sales bridge from 2019 to our revised 2022 guidance. I remind you, 2019 was the first full year following the merger with Zodiac and the last full year prior to the pandemic. That year's sales amounted to 1.4 billion euros. You can see the meaningful contribution from acquisitions and price over the last 3 years. You can also see the accumulated volume effect and the inventory correction. The contribution from volume from 2019 to 2021 was around 600 million euros. We estimate that around 200 million of that volume growth was inventory buildup in the channel, which started correcting during Q3, and as I said earlier, we expect it will peak in Q4 and continue in Q1 next year. Additionally, around 100 million was pull forward demand, mainly Texas freeze, heat, and above-ground pools. We expect that to normalize over a longer period of time, mainly 4 years, including 2022. If you zoom in on 2022, there's roughly an additional 100 million of inventory built in the first half of the year that is also correcting inside of the year. We see positive dynamics with price. We've implemented increases over 25% during the period, and as inflation eases and raw materials and transport costs decline, we should see a favorable impact on margins, returning to a more historic level. Our strong cash generation allowed us to complete accretive acquisitions over the period. And for the financial year 2022, we are now expecting an EBITDA at least 500 million euros, driven mainly by the volume effects I've been pointing out and some dilution in the mix. This is still significantly above 2019 levels, driven by volume, positive price read-through, a higher average ticket, and the contribution from acquisitions. Moving to slide number 5, looking to the midterm, we remain very confident on the fundamentals of the industry. On residential pools, as you know, about two-thirds of our demand is aftermarket. And an enlarged installed base gives an even greater exposure. Over the last 3 years, we estimate more than 1 million pools have been added to the total park. Based on our experience, aftermarket demand is resilient. About a third is new build, which is more cyclical, and we anticipate it will be impacted in the short term by the current economic downturn. It's a bit too early to guide for 2023, but in the spirit of transparency, we wanted to provide some color on the moving parts to help you think about next year. On the left-hand side, you can see a historical look of new residential in-ground pools built in the top 5 countries. This can give you an idea of where demand may end up volume-wise, depending on your view of the future. In 2023, we see demand in new build decline when compared to 2022 levels, with weaker performance in Europe than North America. Central Europe will continue to be the most impacted by the environment, with risk of contagion into Southern Europe. In the States, permit volumes and dealer surveys indicate a decline of 10 to 15%, with a larger impact on the entry-level pool, while builders are carrying into 2023 a backlog in premium pools. The Sun Belt, Fluidra Strength, will continue to outperform the more seasonal markets. We see the aftermarket more robust after the inventory and pull-forward correction, offset by price. Commercial pool, which represents about 10% of sales, remains sound, supported by pent-up demand and the tourism recovery. As you know, the pool industry retains price increases other than in commodity products. We are seeing a mid to low single-digit price impact on 2023. We see our industry transitioning towards the normalized ordering pattern we had historically, with mid-single-digit top-line growth driven by an installed-base growth of 2%, coupled with a higher average ticket due to price and technological improvements in the renewal of pools. If we move to slide number 6, we want to walk you through the actions we are taking and why we are confident we remain well-positioned for the future and in shape to deliver on our medium-term objectives for all our stakeholders. We talked to you about our simplification program and our Q2 results presentation. Initially, this was a 60 million euros plan. We have launched and revised upward this plan to deliver 100 million euros of cost benefits, with a target of delivering a third in each of the next 3 years. The program is focused on redesigning our product offering to achieve savings, streamlining our operations to be more efficient, and simplifying our organization. The team demonstrated the ability to pivot in a changing environment during the pandemic to support our customers. The same team demonstrated the capacity to deliver costs and synergy targets after the merger. I'm confident this team will again manage this transition. At this point, I pass the floor to Eloy for some final remarks.
Thank you, Bruce. As Bruce has said, the industry is destocking, which will continue to have an effect in the short term, and the macro remains uncertain. As these challenges are not structural, we will focus on the things we can control that make us a better company, like our simplification program. We have a temporary impact on our balance sheet. However, our inventory doesn't age, and we'll expect it to correct in the coming quarters. Our balance sheet is solid. We refinanced it at the beginning of this year, and we have long dated maturities. Once we digest the inventory in these next quarters, our cash generation is strong. Our capital allocation framework is consistent, and we retain optionality to continue to build our leading platform. Fluidra is well positioned to continue to lead the pool and wellness market with our customer-centric approach, with our high quality and service, with our broad product portfolio and enlarged geographic footprint. We have been investing in the business to develop the pool of the future in terms of connectivity as well as a complete sustainable products offering, which are two areas where we are clear leaders. We look forward to sharing with you more detailed breakdown of Q3 performance at our scheduled results release next week. Thank you all for your participation. Now we open the Q&A turn. Bruce, Xavier, and I are ready to take your questions. Thank you.
Many thanks, Eloy and Bruce, for your presentation. We now begin the Q&A session. Let me remind you that you will be able to ask questions by dialing the telephone numbers on the Ask a Question tab of your screen. Alex, please go ahead with the first question.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad.
Our first question comes from George Featherstone from Bank of America. George, your line is now open.
Morning, everyone, and thanks for taking the questions. I'll go one at a time. First thing is on the channel inventory normalization. I guess the key here is trying to understand what gives you confidence that the peak of this normalization will be in the fourth quarter, and then the comments that you made on the duration of the normalization, how can we get comfortable with that? Bearing in mind the visibility seems to have changed quite dramatically from the first half to this third quarter.
And George, I mean, clearly we missed on this one, so we've got to own that. When we look back on it, it seems fairly obvious. At the end of Q2, I mean, we saw the inventory correction within the year, but we didn't really see the inventory correction from 2021. And I think the reason was because we had that material backlog. But the reality is 2021 was overserved because sell-in was ahead of demand. And it was hard to see, I think, just because the customers were banging on the door saying, we need more product, we need more product. And so that kind of exaggerated the demand signals that were out there. And if you think about it, it kind of, again, makes sense in hindsight because as we are slow to serve, they're going to try to figure every way to protect their business by building inventory so that they can complete their jobs. In addition, it certainly benefited them because they could beat the price. They knew the inflation was coming at them. And so it was, I think it was smart for them. Supply chain recovered much quicker than we expected in the third quarter, so the soft landing kind of disappeared. You know, we went to famine to feast on the inventory. If you think about it, in our peak, we were over 90 days to serve, and now we're back to our traditional less than 10 days to serve. So, I mean, I think, you know, naturally, what does the supply chain do? They reduce their forward coverage ratios and they go back towards a more normal type of base. In addition, George, we saw inventory out there that, you know, we've never really seen before. We kind of had it anecdotally before, which was that, you know, once you get past distribution, particularly in North America, that you would see pool pros and people like that buy inventory that never had it before. And since then, we've kind of gone out and done some surveys and got a sense of how material that is. And so we feel like the numbers that we have today are, you know, are frankly more accurate than where we were before. But it does mean that the inventory is materially higher than we saw it at the end of Q2. And certainly the economic indicators have gotten a bit more challenging. But let me be clear, although the sell-through pace has slowed a little bit, the biggest issue here is the actual over-serving. So, you know, to give you a sense on the size and scale and our estimates on the read-through, which are our estimates, but again, we believe that we are more laser-focused on this than at the last quarter and feel like we've got a better handle on it. We see the overstocking effect at around 300 to 350 million at the end of Q2. 200 million of that was built in 2021, and another 100 to 150, which is what we talked about last quarter, came in the first half of 2022. Some correction has already happened in Q3. With the visibility we have, we expect the destocking to have the biggest impact in Q4. And into Q1 to a smaller effect, with the caveats, of course, of a high level estimate and demand trends continuing as they are today. So to be really more specific, George, we think about 100 million was corrected in Q3. We think about 150 will be corrected in Q4, and that would put the remainder at about 75 that we think will be mostly complete in Q1.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. That was useful extra color. You talked as well about price contributing about 25% or more to revenue growth over the last 3 years. Question here is, do you need to unwind some of that if the demand is starting to soften? And then also, what gives you confidence that the rest of the industry remains rational on pricing in the face of the level of destocking that is going through right now?
Another good question, George. Again, and I'm going to go off of historical base, this is not a price-sensitive industry at all. And so historically, price increases have never been given back in the core business. Even if you look back at the GFC, the competitive base stayed rational and margins were protected in that period of time. So that is our belief as we look forward. It gets a little bit squishier, George, as you get into the commodities, things like chemistry, chemicals, and pipe. And so we would expect some dilution in those commodity-type products, which are a little bit more price-sensitive.
Alex, we are ready
okay,
for
thanks.
The next question.
Okay.
George, go ahead.
George, you got one more?
Yeah, just one more quick one if that's possible. So leverage is clearly above the target levels now. Appreciate a lot of that will be tied up in working capital from a cash flow perspective. But is there anything else you need to do to address that? And also, does that slow the M&A agenda going forward?
Hi, George. I'll take that one. Yeah, we see leverage obviously going up above our around two times target, but we think that this is just a temporary effect driven by the increase in inventory, which is additionally impacted by the inventory in the channel correction. So we see that coming towards normality, you know, in the following few quarters. Obviously, we are conscious around the, you know, the macroeconomic situation, and we will be cautious and act accordingly as we get into 2023.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, George, for your questions. Alex, I think we are now ready for the next one.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Francisco Ruiz from BNP Paribas. Francisco, your line is now open.
And thank you for this call. I mean, I have also three questions. The first one is if you could give us an indication at what level do you have right now the working capital on the company, and could be a little bit more precise on the volume drop in Q3, if it's possible by geography. The second question, and it's a follow-up on the previous question, is on pricing. So you commented that you do not expect price to go down, but what about the mix effect? I mean, all these high ticket product that has been sold during the pandemic probably will have a much lower demand. So would you see a negative effect on prices in the coming quarters? And the third question is on operator leverage in Q4, because according to your estimate, I mean, maybe the EBITDA in Q4 will drop close to 50%, or correct me if I'm wrong. So what is the reason for such a bigger drop in operator leverage? Thank you.
Yeah, let me take the first one. You know, in terms of working capital, we'll release the results next week. I think that, as you have seen during the year, we have been managing very effectively receivables, and where we have the issue is in inventories, where we are running at this point close to around 29% of LTM sales, which is probably around, you know, one third or even 10 points higher than where we should be. And roughly this represents around 225 million euros of excess that, again, we believe that we will be able to correct in the coming, I would say, three quarters or so, Paco.
From a pricing perspective, Paco, you know, clearly there's a mix effect happening right now in Q3 and to some extent in Q4. There is a little bit on product, just as we're selling some more chemicals in Europe. But from a longer term perspective, I don't think the product mix is material. The bigger mix impact right now is actually country or geography, with lower volume in the States, where that's the bigger size of the material correction. That's the bigger piece of the mix impact right now. Central Europe going down is actually a little bit positive mix. Southern Europe being better is good for us, but the States being smaller is definitely a factor.
And linking that to your third question, those are clearly the drivers of the impact in terms of EBITDA, which is very material, as you point out. Clearly, we have this significant volume impact in Q4, and then a little bit of margin mix, as pointed out by Bruce, in terms of product and geography. And then, you know, finally, I would remind just that the 500 million number that we have provided is a floor that we are providing. It's just a floor, Paco. We, in addition, I would remind you to know that we are launching, obviously, the simplification effort that, as Bruce has pointed out in the call, we have expanded to include right now, you know, right-sizing the organization to the current volumes of revenues, but obviously the impact of that within Q4 is very immaterial.
Yeah, but could you give the breakdown of volume drop in Q3 by geography, or more or less what it has been?
I guess if you look at our overall situation by the three main regions, Europe was let's call it close to the number that we're reporting for the quarter. APAC was better, and the States was worse. So we'll get into the details of that next week, but just to give you some direction. Again, kind of coming back to the correction being the biggest factor.
Thank you, Paco. Alex, please go ahead with the next question.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Ian Souls of JP Morgan. Ian, your line is now open.
Hi, good morning. It's Eric Souls, JP Morgan. I think most of the questions that I have actually been answered because they relate to the guidance upgrade in 1H versus the changes that you make now, and also questions related to the price increases, which I think you all reflected on. Maybe there's two other things in the past. You've talked about the non-discretionary items that you sell, maybe can you reflect on, you know, how you look at that in the current environment, and also, like, when you speak about right-sizing the organization or simplifying your organization, those are sorts of comments that we've heard in the past too. I mean, is there really so much to do in terms of simplifying your organization that will really help your margins going forward?
Okay, so first, from a demand and discretionary, I think we've talked about it a number of times, and the magic of this industry is the annuity-like aftermarket. And, you know, from our sales perspective, about two-thirds of our sales come from this aftermarket. There is a piece of the aftermarket that would be considered a bit more discretionary, and that's the remodel. And so usually that would make up about 15% to 20% of the aftermarket. The remodel section has, at least in North America, has proved to be a bit pent up at this point in time just because of the new pool demand. So we actually feel like remodel will be fairly stable, but it is one of the areas that could be impacted. From a new pool perspective, which makes up about a third of our sales, that is the area that we see as discretionary. The economy will definitely impact it. Rates will impact it. We see it, depending on the geography that you're in, a bit down in units this year. And you can see that from the text of the top five geographies. And we're expecting that to be a bit more down as we look into 2023. And then I would just counter that by saying there's that material price increase that softens that unit, that unit decline. So that's how I think about the discretionary part of the demand. From a simplification standpoint, we launched the program in July, and when I shared that with you, I shared that this is actually a program that we were looking at 2 years ago. Before COVID. So the reality is, you know, since the merge, we always felt like there was a second wave of opportunity. We've added 10 acquisitions on top of that. And then with COVID, we've added another billion of top line. And so we felt like there was a huge opportunity. We just couldn't get at it during the accelerated demand cycle. So that's where we started. Now, as we look at the realities of the business, we've added on another element to that, as Javier was just speaking, of simplifying our organization structure to really match the size of the business. So we feel confident that opportunity is there. And as we stated, we see it as 100 million, and we see it as about a third, a third, a third, as we look forward.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Alex, please go ahead with the next question.
Thank you. And as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, that's star followed by one on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Alvaro Lenze from Alantra. Alvaro, your line is now open.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. I believe you mentioned that you expect most of the inventory excess inventories to be consumed during H2 and the first half of next year. But if I understood correctly, this was at current demand rate. So my question would be, what's the insight you could provide us on the underlying demand trends, whether the pool professionals continue to see strong backlogs or whether you're seeing final demand being affected by the macro slowdown and rates and the potential cycle downturn in the housing market, especially in the U.S. So that would be my first question. And secondly, you've mentioned that you do not expect prices to come down, maybe some mix effect, but what about discounting? Could you expect, even if you maintain the list prices as the industry has done in the past, maybe we could see higher discounting activity in order to reduce inventory levels? Thanks.
Okay, so from a demand perspective, well, it's been a really volatile year. I'll talk about North America first, and I'll come to Europe if you like. So from a North America perspective, we started off the year really strong, continuing that double-digit type of growth. We ran into the comparison of the Texas freeze, which brought the demand to flat. I think there was probably some signals in there that we may have missed beyond the Texas freeze. But then as we got through the Texas freeze, we saw it kind of get back up to mid-single digit. July and August were double digit, so it was, you know, feeling like everything was running as anticipated. September stalled, and then October is running much more like July and August. So, you know, in the end, what we're calling the U.S. at is mid-single digit sell-through, and that's really how we've looked at our models as we approach forward. That's Fluidra's view. I'm sure you guys know that the world's largest distributor will be speaking in the next couple of days, and I think they're always a good barometer to see what the demand is in the U.S. So I think they will echo, if not even higher, because you know, they won't see that that destocking impact that we do. As you go to Europe, we talked about the sell-through rates in July, with Central Europe being down kind of high single to low double digit. That decline has accelerated a little bit and is probably now in the low double digit to mid. France was kind of running about up 3 to 5%. Now it's kind of more flattish to 3%. And Southern Europe was running close to double digit up, and now I would say that's you know, mid single digit. So a little bit of deceleration in the in demand in Europe, but really not the material issue. The material issue is the destocking that's taken place in North America. From a price perspective, you know, our expectation is that you know, price trends kind of return to a more normalized level. The industry has taken price again in October to set up the 2023 season at kind of a mid single digit to low single digit type of price increase. That enables the discount that is actually the early buy in the States. And so that early buy is returned to kind of a more traditional type of approach. But outside of that, I don't believe it will be significant discounting because it really just doesn't move the needle.
Okay, and just a quick follow-up, if I may. Regarding the streamlining and efficiency plans, is there any expected cost to execute this, or is this mostly reorganization that doesn't entail much investment to achieve the cost savings?
No, I'll take that one. As we said in the second quarter results conference call, there is a one-off cost associated to it, and we still don't have the final number, but you can, from a planning point of view, assume that it's going to be slightly below one-time savings.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Alvaro. Alex, please go ahead with the next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Manuel Lorente from Mirabeau. Manuel, your line is now open.
Hi, good morning. My first question, I know that it might be too early and there are many different moving parts, but my first question is regarding the expectations for next year. To try to make a long story short, do you believe that your 100 million euros, more or less, EBITDA expectations for this year is a good starting point to build up our estimates for next year, or is more a blue sky scenario for next year, given the mountain destocking, demand issues, lack of visibility, blah, 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 blah?
I'm not sure I can make a long story short, Manuel, but I'll try to take a shot at 2023. And I think I got most of it, so maybe Javier kicks in a little bit here at the end. I appreciate your qualifier up front, because for sure visibility is limited at this point, and clearly we don't have a crystal ball. We do expect to start the year with lower volumes in Q1. We've got a really tough comp in Q1, and we know we've got some continuation of the inventory correction. From a new construction standpoint, I'll just kind of reiterate some of the comments and then talk about the aftermarket. We're seeing some decline in new construction unit volume in 2022. We expect that to continue in 2023. Again, I think Europe's going to be tougher than the States. And, but from our planning standpoint, that's the way we're looking at it. We think the States will be down in the 10 to 15% kind of range in units, and obviously Europe then again a little bit tougher. Now, I do think it matters that entry pools will be more impacted than premium pools. Premium pools is a strength of ours in the States. So I think that is ultimately good for Fluidra, as well as the strength in the Sun Belt. As you go to the aftermarket, we see the aftermarket is always being more robust. So after the inventory and pull forward correction, unit volume will be down, but consider that offset by price. Commercial pool solid. So that gives you the breadcrumbs, if you will, for the top line. As you think about the margin, average tickets higher, our prices are continuing to go forward and go through. And so we think, margin should return to a more kind of historic type of, rates. And then, last but not least, on the OPEX side is the simplification program. And we've already started to move on that direction. So again, we're confident in that 100 million program over 3 years, with targeting about a third, a third, a third.
Yeah, the only thing I would add there, Bruce, just as a reminder, that when you look at our operating expenses, around 60% of them are fixed cost and 40% are variable. So I think with that and the breadcrumbs that Bruce has mentioned, I think you can build your model.
And can you repeat the phasing of the 100 million euro simplification program?
Yeah, it's
around full achievement in
each of the coming 3 years.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for your question, Manuel. Alex, do we need a bit more time to compile more questions, or have we addressed all of the questions?
We have no further questions, so I'll hand back to yourselves for any further remarks.
Thank you. So this marks the end of today's presentation. We thank our speakers and participants, and as always, please feel free to reach out to us at the Investor Relations team for further queries. Alex, you may now disconnect the call.